Welcome to CMDA Matters, a weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Chupp, and I am guessing that it won't surprise you if I tell you that according to a survey conducted in June 2020 by an evangelical Christian organization, that over half of American adults, 58%, say you get to decide what's right and wrong for yourself. But you may be surprised that this same survey revealed that even among those who attend evangelical churches, 46% rejected the idea of absolute moral truth, and only 43% of professing born-again Christians believe in the existence of absolute truth. The post-truth era, as it's called, has had a profound influence upon the body of Christ, and particularly those of us who have chosen healthcare as a profession. Today, my special guest is Mr. Abdu Murray. Abdu has been a prolific speaker representing the Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. He has authored 4 books, including his latest book, Seeing Jesus from the East, a fresh look at history's most influential figure, and I think you know who that figure is, Jesus. For most of his life, Abdu was a devout Muslim who studied the Quran and Islam. After a 9-year investigation, Abdu discovered that the historic Christian faith alone answers the questions of the mind and the longings of the heart. Abdu has spoken to diverse international audiences and has participated in debates and dialogues all across the globe. He's appeared as a guest on numerous radio and television programs all over the world and hosts the podcast entitled The Defense Rests. He holds a bachelor's in psychology from the University of Michigan, as well as his graduate law degree. As an attorney, Abdu was named several times in Best Lawyers in America and Michigan Super Lawyer. Abdu lives in Detroit, Michigan with his wife and their 3 children. Let's listen in on my conversation recently with Mr. Abdu Murray. Well, for several months, I have been looking forward to an interview with Mr. Abdu Murray, who is the Senior Vice President of the Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. So welcome to CMDA Matters.
Oh, it's great to be with you. Thanks so much for having me on.
Does the ministry focus remain Ravi's sort of motto, which is getting thinkers to believe and believers to think? Does that carry on now that he's passed?
Oh, absolutely. That's the infusion of what the whole ministry was about to begin with. You know, Ravi, when he was beginning the ministry, talked to his wife, Margie, and said, you know, I think people are forgetting the mission field of the mind, that there's thinking people out there, whether they're truck drivers or maintenance people or doctors or dentists, people with lab coats or people with smocks on. Everyone of all walks of life, he says, is a thinker, and we're missing the mission field of the mind. You know, it's interesting. I'll just give you a quick story. Ravi and I were at a barbecue joint in Amarillo, Texas. He had just got done speaking. I was speaking that week as well. And we were at this barbecue joint, and it's the kind of good barbecue place where when the meat is done, they close the place down because they make it all that day. It's not like a prepackaged thing. Well, this guy waddles over to us. He's a little bit on the round side. He comes over to us and big man with the mesh back hat and the big old beard and the Texas accent. And he says over to Ravi, he says, "You, Ravi?" And Ravi says, "It depends who's asking, you know, because you see this big, big man." And he says, "I want you to know I listen to you every day when I drive truck. And you really answer all my questions. You really speak to my mind." So Ravi walks out with me into the parking lot and he says, "Isn't it fascinating who listens to the program?" He says, "I never want you to forget this. Everyone is a thinker. Don't discount anyone. Everyone is a thinker." So that's the DNA with which we continue the ministry after his passing.
Well, I guarantee you there are a lot of thinkers listening right now. So let's jump into the idea of that we are living in a post-truth culture. And your book covers a lot of territory, but I wanted to focus on a basic question. How do you think a post-truth culture is impacting healthcare in an adverse way?
Well, the post-truth culture is basically a culture that elevates feelings and preferences above facts and truth. So it's important to recognize that a post-truth culture is not a postmodern culture. So a postmodern culture is one in which we're sort of emerging out of, which is one that denies that objective truths actually exist. Everything's a matter of interpretation. Everything's a matter of opinion. And so there is no such thing as objective truth, which of course is self-defeating. The minute you say there's no objective truth, you're positing an objective truth. Right. And if you are, then of course it's self-defeating. A post-truth culture is different because a post-truth culture says, yeah, there's objective truth, but if it happens to go against my preferences, I will ignore it. Or we'll just lie about it. So I think in healthcare, there's a number of ways in which this can impact negatively the industry. For example, there was a study that was published by the Smithsonian. The Smithsonian talked about a study, and it was a study of studies. What they were trying to do was see if they could repeat, using the protocols that were actually published as part of the studies, whether they could repeat the findings of various peer-reviewed, published articles on various experiments and various things that were done to verify certain theories or whatever it might be, ranging from psychology to the medical field to physics, you name it. And what they found is they could only reproduce the findings of 40% of the studies that were published in like Science and Nature. That's alarming. That's less than half.
Yes.
What they concluded essentially, and to their credit, the science of the world was shocked and appalled by this and recognized the flaws and says we have to do better. And the reason for it is that there's a sexiness, if you will. There's a headlininess to breaking new ground. And sometimes publishing your protocols in a way that are followable and getting grant money to reproduce things, it just isn't as forthcoming as groundbreaking. And so there is a preference to be groundbreaking, but that goes over and above our love of facts. So that's the underlying basis behind this whole thing. But then you look at the application, and without picking on this particular issue, but having to use it as a highlight, when you look at the studies that have been repeated and have been verified in terms of their findings on gender dysphoria, for example, what you find is, and this is published, by the way, in journals that are based on and based in the most transgender-friendly countries in the world, where they find that people who have genuine, actual gender dysphoria, the condition where what you feel like mentally and emotionally in terms of your gender does not match what your body's actually saying it is. In other words, you have a Y chromosome, but you feel like you should have two X's, that kind of a thing, where it's an actual, real, honest-to-goodness feeling as opposed to a sort of a cultural fad. When people are like that, and they engage in sex reassignment surgery and the hormone therapies and all that comes with it, they are still, even after the surgery, in the most trans-friendly countries in the world.
Sweden among them, yes.
They are still 19 times more likely than the average person to kill themselves. So what does that say? It says that the medicine and the surgery doesn't fix the problem. Yet we keep telling everybody the medicine and the surgery will fix the problem. And they'll say, well, wait, it's society. Even after they come through the surgery, society still mocks them and does all these things. No. This is in the most transgender-friendly, transsexual-friendly countries in the world. They're still 19 times more likely to kill themselves. So if it were the case that in healthcare, what we're trying to treat is not symptoms, ultimately we're trying to treat causes, then we recognize something that if you treat the symptom, the feeling of the dysphoria, and you try to treat it with medicine and surgery that just gives sway to the preference, they have a preference as it were, or the societal preference and the societal pressure, let's be honest, then you're not really doing medicine anymore. What you're not doing healthcare, that's for sure. You might be practicing medicine, but you're not practicing healthcare. And there's a difference, I think, fundamentally, because we do have to care about our patients. And so in the post-truth culture, where preferences matter more than facts and truth, if our scientists, if our healthcare professionals, if those whose livelihood is based not only on science in terms of describing the way the physical world works, but also augmented by the moral realities of life, and we're just giving them way to the pressures of life, I don't think we're going to have a healthcare system that looks out for the best interest of the patient as opposed to looking out for the pressure.
And we will literally have, Abdu, a demoralized workforce within healthcare, because the vast majority of healthcare professionals are truly driven by the desire to see their patients flourishing. And with the knowledge, I'm not sure if you're aware that last fall, right in line with what you're talking about, how the post-truth culture is impacting our research, American Journal of Psychiatry released a study from Sweden, a follow-up from a very big study in 2011, but they decided to select out 1 year of analysis, 2015, looking at some factors in terms of attempted suicides, not completed suicides, mind you, but attempted suicides, as well as medications for some psychiatric illnesses. And the title of the article is that after sex reassignment surgery is that that population does better. So surgery is beneficial. Now, in the small print in the study as well, those who got hormone puberty blockers, it actually didn't help. Well, then months later, many of our CMBA members and others who really understand this field, behavioral medicine, challenged the American Journal of Psychiatry about the way they did their statistics. And to their credit, they went back, hired an independent statistics firm to look at their numbers, and lo and behold, there actually was no statistical difference whatsoever for those who had sex reassignment surgery in Sweden. Massive database. And there's some ways that it appears the data was manipulated so that it would appear that those with surgery had a better outcome. But I like your quote of G.K. Chesterton, that a world of facts, a world with facts has limits. And in healthcare, Abdu, as a surgeon, I had limits. I had to deal with the facts of the diagnoses of my patients. And facts tended to be our friends. So I think in healthcare, many of our members, and even those who are not of faith, Abdu, I'd be interested in your thoughts about those who care about truth and about scientific method and evidence. Are they not really uncomfortable right now in this post-truth culture?
You know, what's interesting about that is that there were some noted atheists and agnostics who had said, essentially, that while it is the case right now that the post-truth culture is going after the conservative and the religious, it's only a matter of time before they come after the scientist. Because the scientist, at least in theory, has an unswerving allegiance to the discovery of truth, no matter how inconvenient, and all these kind of things. So I do think there is a level of discomfort right now, and you're seeing it all the time happening now, where scientists are being shouted down because of the conclusions based on the scientific method, and they're being told, go back and do it again, or it's considered non-peer reviewed. You know, there was a thing, I don't know if you remember this, happened a few years ago, where there was, I was Peter Boghossian, who's an atheist, and a couple of other academics who were publishing and proposing the craziest thing they could possibly posit with no backing whatsoever, because it happened to toe the line of what the post-truth culture right now is saying is their preferences, you know, with regard to gender, sexuality, all these various things. And they were positing the weirdest things. And because it was out there, because it was wacky, because it was fringy, it was getting published almost uncritically in major journals. And it was an experiment. They were saying, we didn't have any real backing for any of this. We didn't have any real findings. It was just, it happened to line up with what the editors of those journals actually believed in some way. And it was very disturbing to them, because as people whose claim it is that to follow the facts wherever they lead, because truth will ultimately be our solace, they were disturbed by this. And so, yes, I do think there are practitioners who are taking the science out there and then applying it in the world. You're right. The demoralization is very, very high. And by the way, this is not for just Christian people. This is for people outside of the Christian faith, people who care about the integrity of science and the integrity of its applications for practitioners. They are getting demoralized. It's becoming an industry. It's becoming not only an industry that makes money, but an industry that shapes opinion and is shaped by what's out there as well. So the pursuit of the health of the patient or whatever it may be is becoming a secondary consideration, maybe even a tertiary one.
There's a picture from this summer, Abdu, that will forever be embedded on my brain now from Cornell. I don't know if you heard the law professor, William Jacobson, there, who had printed an editorial about the background of the Black Lives Matter, how it got started, what it, you know, what the organization was all about. And the students decided to boycott his classes. And there, the picture in the secular newspaper was with a group of students arm in arm. And in the middle of this picture is a student, a university student. His T-shirt says, "Bathing Ape, Bathing Ape." And I thought, your book, all through each chapter, reminded my friend and I of just this cognitive dissonance that is there. How can a young university student who's protesting this racist, in quotes, professor, on his shirt say that I'm a bathing ape? And you mentioned in your chapter on faith and science about how can there be any morality if the natural sciences teach us that we are just glorified chimpanzees?
Yeah, and this is actually coming from an atheist thinker. Okay, he is a neurologist, Raymond Tallis. I highly recommend, by the way, this is a book by an atheist, and I highly recommend it for every Christian to read this book, especially if you're scientifically minded. It's called Aping Mankind, and he takes to task two cultural phenomena that he sees. He calls it neuromania and Darwinitis. So as a neurologist who actually is a Darwinist as well, he says that we try to explain everything through a neuroscience, and it can't explain everything. And we also try to explain it completely through Darwinism, and Darwinism can't explain everything, like human consciousness, human conscience, morality, and meaning. He basically says we try to scientifically root these things because of the reductionistic view of humanity. So Aping Mankind is basically, his thesis is that through science, this is the irony of ironies, through the fact that we have the faculty to engage in science, we are trying to reduce human beings to mere animality or chemical machinehood. Here's the irony of it. If we are just sophisticated chimps, or chemical machines, then science itself isn't possible.
Right.
And yet we use the faculties we have to do science to prove we are not capable of science. And that is ironic, and it loses the sense of morality. So the young man who is trying to protest, and look, I understand there is a moral impetus in this. The Bible tells us this, that there is the moral law written in our hearts as well, not just delivered to Moses on Sinai, but also inscribed in our hearts because we are made in God's image. And yet here is a young man who is trying to say, essentially, all human beings, regardless of their background, have an essential worth. He's trying to say it is an objective worth. And yet with his mouth, he's saying it, and with his T-shirt, he's denying it. Because if we are a cosmic accident, if evolution is the way things are, then to quote Alfred Lord Tennyson, then nature is red in tooth and claw. And Darwin himself said that essentially his theory justifies, or at least doesn't stand in the way of, the belief that one species of man or one race of man is superior physically and in every other way to another. And so if evolution is the subjugation of the weak by the genetically strong, and that helps to propagate our species and improve us over time, then how can we actually have an outrage, a moral center, an objective sense that racism is wrong? So while I want to applaud the young man's sensibility that racism is wrong, whether he's right-headed or wrong-headed about BLM or whatever is irrelevant in this particular moment, I want to applaud his desire to say that people have essential worth and essential dignity. I want to say to him, young man, the problem is that you have no philosophical and no logical basis for what you're saying, unless you can believe that we are not here by accident, because accidents can't have a moral backing behind, or a moral, frankly, an immorality behind getting. Well, paramecium don't kill each other or compete for food, and it's not immoral because they're just single-celled organisms that don't have a morality attached to them. But we do. outrage at racism, I should say, is only justified if there is something of an essential equality about every human being that does not depend on biology, that does not depend on circumstance, but depends on an objective referent. And that objective reference has to be the one who created everything.
Well, Abdu, as we close this podcast and this interview, what you write to conclude your book is just so powerful. What is truth? We may ask in a world that elevates personal preference over truth. The answer is Jesus, the truth who is personal. He is the saving truth. Any final word that you would like to give to challenge the 20,000 plus members of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations?
A good friend of mine gave me a couple of tips on always remembering what it is, the purpose behind what I do. And he said this essentially is like, remember your assignment. What is your assignment? It's to make Christ known and to know him in your life. Remember who does the work. It's Christ who does it. And never be surprised. Always expect the unexpected, both good and the bad. And sometimes you will be surprised in a delightful way, but expect that the Lord will use you in a shocking way to impact someone's life for the good, whether it's through your dental practice or your medical practice or whatever it happens to be, you can impact people. One last parting word is, I remember sitting across the table from a doctor who was an atheist. He had become that way through a series of things that happened in his life. And my wife asked him a question. She said, what gets you up in the morning? What inspires you? He says, oh, it's people. Helping people inspires me. So I asked the question. I said, why? And he thought I was asking the most ridiculous question. What do you mean, why? I mean, isn't it, it's like one of these self-evident things. I'm like, well, it's not really self-evident to me because you believe, you just got done telling me that we're just chemical machines. So let me ask you, how are you a physician who helps people in their time of greatest physical need and provides assurances and helps them? How are you really that as opposed to just an expensively educated mechanic? Aren't you just a mechanic who's working on machines? He didn't like that. Mm-hmm. He hated it, in fact. And I didn't offend him. It just clearly made him uncomfortable. The point is this, though, is that the purpose and the meaning that is suffused in his calling was absent unless there is a God who not only gives the people he's working on value, but creates value in the calling he is involved in, because there is a God who infuses this world with morality and every human being with dignity. And so his profession is not simply just something he does to make money so that he can have children and propagate his species. His profession has meaning, and that meaning lasts into eternity. And he know when he realized that, he liked that. And he started to really consider whether or not there is a God after all.
Wow. Powerful message. Thank you, Abdu, for taking time out of your day. I know you have a busy speaking schedule, and may God continue to open up hearts and minds to what you have to share, and as you share God's word and a perspective, and just encourage our listeners, Saving Truth, Finding Meaning and Clarity in a Post-Truth World. Excellent book. And also your recent book. I haven't read it yet, but I'm looking forward to reading Seeing Jesus from the East, since you released that this year.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. It's been a real pleasure, and very much believe in the work that CMDA does.
You know, as I reflect on my conversation with Abdu Murray, the word reasonable came to my mind, broken up into reason able. I'm so glad that Abdu gave us an example of how he would approach that conversation with a Cornell student who was marching for a moral cause that he apparently believes in, while also holding on to the view that he's an ape who practices decent hygiene. I came across recently an excellent opinion piece on the First Things daily blog. First Things puts out a journal of religion and public life. The blog is from August 27th this year, written by Professor Robert George and colleagues from Princeton. I've shared that blog piece with a number of my friends, and I highly recommend it to you, especially as you interact with and influence undergrad and grad students and your family and your networks. Professor George and colleagues were writing to university students this year, particularly addressing those whose beliefs are somehow out of step with the dominant opinion on campus. They noted that sooner or later, if you think for yourself, you're going to contravene the reigning orthodoxy, they say. This is just a 2-page blog, and I don't have time to read it all today. So just one paragraph. Quote, "Thinking is not something that can be outsourced. You have to do it for yourself. Do not let your professors tell you what to think. Do not let popular opinion on campus dictate your convictions. When you encounter groupthink on campus, probe and question. What is to be said on the other side? Are there thinkers and writers who doubt or deny the consensus? If so, read and carefully consider what they have to say. Make up your own mind," end quote. I highly recommend this challenge from Professor Robert George and several of his colleagues at Princeton. I believe it to be an excellent challenge to all in academics in this post-truth environment to be reason-able, reasonable. I highly encourage you to check out First Things from August 27th this year. Well, on the program, I always recommend resources for you related to my interview, and certainly Saving Truth is a book I highly recommend. I also want to ask the question, is it really too late for America? Has our allegiance to our preferences at the expense of truth done irreparable damage to our culture? One of my earlier guests this year, Timothy Gagline from Focus on the Family, sure doesn't think so. In his book, American Restoration, How Faith, Family, and Personal Sacrifice Can Heal Our Nation, Gagline talks about just what it would take to heal our democracy. His insights, they just might surprise you and give you some hope. You can purchase his book at cmda.org/store or by calling 888-230-2637. Our life and health resources staff, Kara, she'll be happy to get a copy in the mail to you right away. I'd also like to recommend the book, again by one of my previous guests this year, entitled Free to Believe, The Battle Over Religious Liberty in America by Mr. Luke Goodrich of Beckett Law. This book is an excellent resource to understand the issue of freedom of religion in the United States right now. It examines religious freedom from a biblical worldview, giving practical advice as to how Christians can respond to religious freedom conflicts in an informed, responsible, and graceful way. This book is also available at CMDA. You know, I've been waiting for weeks to highlight an important ministry of CMDA that you may not be familiar with. CMDA Placement Services is a recruiting service dedicated to bringing together healthcare professionals of like-minded faith to be yoked together to grow God's kingdom. It is a two-way ministry as it assists both healthcare professionals who are seeking positions as well as practices looking for such Christian healthcare professionals. Our placement service will introduce you to opportunities nationwide as we work with various entities such as hospitals, independent practices, community health centers, FQHCs, urgent care, and inner city ministries. Alan Vickers and Rose Courtney have been serving our members for many years and would love to assist with your search or your recruitment needs. If you're searching for a position or an associate, they want to get to know you on a personal basis and hear about your calling, your goals, your expectations and preferences, your testimony and thoughts about how you might integrate faith into your future practice. This personal approach or personal touch helps us find the perfect fit for both healthcare professionals and practices. Our service is free to healthcare professionals looking for a position or practice to join. When a placement is made for practices recruiting associates, we charge a fee that is far below the national average. This fee occurs only if a placement is made, plus it helps support our ministries at CMDA. If you'd like to learn more or register, just go to cmda.org/placement or contact their toll-free number at 888-690-9054. I just want you to know that the 2020 Emerging Leaders in Dentistry Zoom Conference is coming up on October 31st. I mentioned this last week with a slight error regarding the end time. The conference actually begins both at 9 a.m. and then is repeated at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, just go to cmda.org/events and click on Emerging Leaders in Dentistry Zoom Conference so you can register. CMDA also has an online seminar coming up for November 6th and 7th, and this seminar is called 501 Foundations for Christian Coaching, and it counts for continuing education credits. You're going to want to register as soon as possible because the one that's currently going on is already full. You'll be able to hear from the director of CMDA's Center for Wellbeing, Dr. Steve Sartori, as well as Director of Communications for the Center, Pastor Ken Jones. They're joined by Dr. Ann Sen, who's the Director of Life and Leadership Coaching for our Center for Wellbeing. She'll also be speaking. Topics include helping patients achieve their health goals, helping colleagues out of burnout, caring for your own well-being, and not trying to fix others. So you're not going to want to miss that. For more information, you can find the link on cmda.org/events. We had an excellent webinar last week in conjunction with Dallas Theological Seminary, which was hosted on our CMDA Learning Center. Just go to cmda.org/learningcenter and find that conference video under non-CE courses. Dr. Jeff Barrows and Dr. Stephen Coe and Dr. Daryl Bach from Dallas shared a lot of good information about COVID-19 and how Christians can respond appropriately. We got a lot of great feedback from that webinar, so be sure to check that out at your convenience. Well, as I close today's program, I wonder if my conversation with Abdu Murray caused you to remember Jesus' words in John chapter 8, verse 32, when he said, "You will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." Or his words in John chapter 14, verse 6, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." Jesus claimed to be the only truth, leaving only three possibilities. He was either a liar, or he was a lunatic, or as he claimed to be, he is Lord over all truth and knowledge. Sharing the transformative truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ, it must matter to his followers in healthcare. And what must matter to followers of Christ in healthcare like you? Well, it matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. We'll see you next week, God willing.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.